Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going behind the scenes at Shawnee Public Schools in Oklahoma.
Oh,
We've
yeah.
got over a decade's worth of financial reports.
Wow.
And let me tell you, these numbers tell a story.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
It's like a, think of it like a financial x-ray, you know?
Okay.
We can see how they manage their money, make tough decisions, and ultimately how those choices affect students, teachers, and the whole community.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we're here for. To
Exacto.
see, can Shawnee Public Schools keep the lights on and the classrooms running with the resources they have? Or are there some financial red flags buried in these reports?
Yeah, well, the first thing that jumps out at you is the balancing act that they're doing with their funding sources.
Okay.
You've got local property taxes, you've got state funding, and then you've got federal grants, and the mix has been shifting over time.
Right. And those federal grants seem to be the lifeblood for programs like special education and child nutrition.
That's right.
It's like they have their own dedicated pipelines of money.
Exactly. And that brings us to the concept of funds.
Okay.
Think of them as separate bank accounts within the school district's overall budget.
Okay.
So the general fund is like their checking account for day-to-day expenses, while special revenue funds are more like savings accounts earmarked for specific things like building maintenance or debt repayment.
Right. So it's all about compartmentalizing the money and making sure it goes where it's supposed to.
Yeah.
But let's get down to brass tacks here.
Yeah.
How did Shawnee Public Schools actually perform against their budget projections?
Yeah.
Were they able to stay within those lines, or did things go haywire?
Now, this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
They have this really fascinating pattern of overestimating their revenue and underestimating their expenses.
Ah.
But here's the kicker. They almost always end up with a smaller deficit than projected or even a surplus.
Wait a minute. So they're constantly bracing for the worst,
Right.
but ending up in better financial shape than they anticipated? How is that even possible? Are they just being overly cautious, or is there some like secret sauce to their budgeting process?
Well, take 2015, for example.
Right.
They projected a shortfall of nearly $4 million, but they ended the year with a surplus.
Wow.
And again, in 2017, they anticipated a deficit of over $1 million,
Yeah.
but the actual gap was much smaller.
Okay, that's impressive. But it still leaves me wondering, like, why the persistent underestimation of expenses? Is it just a matter of unforeseen costs popping up, like emergency repairs or unexpected enrollment spikes? Or could it be something else?
I mean, it's probably a combination of factors.
Okay.
School districts operate in a dynamic environment.
Right.
They can't predict everything with perfect accuracy.
Of course not.
Sometimes costs exceed initial projections and unexpected needs arise.
Right. It's not like they have a crystal ball to foresee every plumbing leak or textbook shortage.
Exactly.
So how do they handle those inevitable surprises without throwing the whole budget off track?
Well, that's where tools like sinking funds and building bonds come into play.
So sinking funds are like rainy day funds, specifically designated for these big future expenses, like replacing a roof or upgrading technology. And then building bonds allow the district to borrow money for major projects, like constructing new schools or renovating existing facilities.
Okay, so it's all about having a financial cushion
Yeah.
to absorb those unexpected shocks.
Exactly.
But those building bonds, they sound like they could add a significant amount to the district's overall debt.
They do, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, similar to a mortgage. Building bonds allow the district to make a substantial investment that they might not be able to afford up front. It's a way to spread the cost out over time.
That makes sense. But I'm still curious about the details.
Sure.
When they issue these bonds, what are the typical interest rates they're looking at? And how does that affect the total amount they have to repay over the life of the bond? I mean, we're talking about a significant financial commitment here. Yeah, you're absolutely right. These bonds typically carry interest rates around 4%,
Okay.
which means that the district will end up repaying almost double the principal over the bond's 20-year lifespan.
Wow.
It requires careful budgeting to ensure that those payments don't squeeze out other essential programs.
So they're essentially playing a long game with these bonds, betting on future growth and revenue to cover the costs. But what happens if those projections don't pan out? Are they putting themselves at risk?
That's a valid concern,
Yeah.
and it really highlights the importance of responsible financial management.
Sure.
They need to strike a delicate balance between investing in the future and maintaining a sustainable budget.
Now, speaking of responsible management, I can't help but think back to that mysterious school property they sold in 2016 for over $1,300.
Oh, yeah.
The report doesn't shed any light on what exactly they sold.
Right.
It's like a financial cliffhanger.
It certainly piques your curiosity.
It does.
Doesn't it? Was it a surplus school bus? Was it a stockpile of outdated textbooks? Or maybe something more intriguing? Maybe. We may never know the full story.
Right. It just goes to show that even with all these detailed reports, there are still some unanswered questions, and sometimes those mysteries can be just as fascinating as the numbers themselves.
Absolutely. It encourages us to think critically about the information presented and consider different interpretations.
Okay, let's shift gears now and talk about a program that's often overlooked in these financial discussions, child nutrition.
Yeah.
It's about more than just cafeteria lunches. It's about ensuring that students have the fuel they need to learn and thrive.
Couldn't agree more. And Shawnee Public Schools has dedicated a significant portion of their budget to this program over the years. But what's interesting is how that funding has fluctuated relative to the overall budget.
Mm.
Sometimes it seems like a top priority, while other times it takes a back seat.
So walk us through some of those highs and lows. Give us a sense of how the district's commitment to child nutrition has kind of ebbed and flowed over time.
Well, in 2016, the child nutrition budget actually decreased by 5%, even though the overall budget increased by 3%.
Mm. That's a pretty stark contrast.
Yeah.
So what about the other side of the coin? When did child nutrition seem to be front and center in their budget decisions?
Fast forward to 2020, and we see a different picture.
Okay.
They allocated over $1.7 million to the program, a 10% increase from the previous year.
Wow.
And a clear indication that they were prioritizing student nutrition.
Okay, so it seems like they're trying to strike a balance.
Yeah.
But it's a constant tug of war between competing needs.
Right.
It's a reminder that even with the best intentions, school districts are always facing these tough choices about how to allocate their limited resources.
And those choices have a ripple effect on everything from classroom supplies to teacher salaries.
Speaking of oversight and accountability, let's talk about those annual audits.
Yeah.
They're like the financial watchdogs,
you know,
making sure everything is above board. So what did those audits reveal about Shawnee Public Schools' financial practices? Any skeletons in the closet?
Overall, they received a clean bill of health.
Okay.
No major scandals or red flags, but there were a few minor findings that are worth noting.
Oh. Do tell.
In 2011, for example, the auditors flagged some late activity fund deposits and coding errors for federal programs.
Okay.
And in 2019, they raised concerns about payments issued without approved reserves, which could point to a potential lapse in financial controls.
Hmm. Those do sound a bit concerning. Even if they were just isolated incidents, couldn't they be indicative of a larger issue with financial oversight?
It's certainly something that warrants attention.
Yeah.
But to their credit, the district took those findings seriously and implemented corrective actions, which demonstrates a commitment to transparency and continuous improvement.
Okay, that's reassuring to hear. But even those seemingly small slip-ups can sometimes reveal areas where they could tighten things up.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's why these audits are so valuable. They provide an independent assessment of the district's financial health and help ensure that public funds are being used wisely and effectively.
Well, it sounds like Shawnee Public Schools is in a relatively good shape, but there's always room for improvement.
Right.
However, there's one big looming challenge that we haven't addressed yet, and that is the Oklahoma Teachers Retirement System, or OTRS.
Yes, the pension puzzle.
Yeah.
This one's a bit complex, but it has major implications for school districts across the state, including Shawnee.
All right, so give us the rundown. What is OTRS and why should our listeners care about it?
So OTRS is a pension plan for Oklahoma teachers.
Okay.
Funded by contributions from the district, the state, and the employees themselves.
Okay.
It's designed to provide a secure retirement for those who dedicate their lives to educating our children.
That sounds like a worthy goal.
It is.
So what's the problem? Why is this a puzzle?
The problem is that OTRS is facing a significant underfunded pension benefit obligation. In plain English, they don't have enough money in the pot to cover all the future retirement payments they've promised to teachers.
Hmm. You mentioned that this is a problem for the state to solve, not the school district.
Right.
But how does this underfunding affect Shawnee Public Schools specifically?
Well, even though it's a statewide issue, the consequences trickle down to the local level.
Okay.
If OTRS doesn't have enough money to meet its obligations, it could lead to increased contributions from school districts, putting a further strain on their already tight budgets.
So it's like this financial time bomb ticking away.
Right.
Potentially jeopardizing the district's long-term stability.
It's certainly a cause for concern, and it highlights the interconnectedness of school finance decisions made at the state level can have a profound impact on local school districts.
We've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our deep dive, from deciphering budget line items to unraveling the complexities of pension systems.
Yeah.
It's clear that school finance is anything but simple.
Absolutely. And we've only just scratched the surface.
Stay tuned for part two, where we'll delve deeper into the political landscape surrounding school funding in Oklahoma and explore how those dynamics shape the financial reality for districts like Shawnee Public Schools.
Sounds good.
All right.
I'm excited.
Me too. This is good stuff.
Yeah, these financial reports, they offer a fascinating glimpse into the inner workings of a school district, you know?
Right.
But they don't tell the whole story to truly understand Shawnee Public Schools.
Right.
We need to, like, zoom out and consider the political context.
Okay, so let's paint that bigger picture. What's the political landscape surrounding school funding in Oklahoma? Is it a smooth ride or more like a bumpy off-road adventure?
Well, let's just say it's a hotly contested arena. Oklahoma has been a battleground for debates about education funding, you know, with strong opinions on both sides.
Give us some specifics. What are the main points of contention?
Well, it's a tangled web of issues,
yes.
But some of the recurring themes include the balance of power between state and local control, the role of property taxes, and the perennial struggle to reconcile the needs of schools with taxpayer concerns.
So it's a classic tug of war between those who believe the state should have more say in how schools are funded and those who champion local control.
Exactly.
What about property taxes? Where do they fit into this equation?
Well, property taxes are a major source of funding for schools in Oklahoma.
Right.
But they're also a very contentious issue.
Right.
Some argue that they place an unfair burden on homeowners, while others maintain that they're absolutely essential for providing adequate resources for schools.
I remember reading about that 2015 county sales tax. Wasn't that supposed to provide some relief for schools?
Yes.
And potentially ease the pressure on property taxes?
That's right. The county implemented a new sales tax with a portion of the revenue earmarked for education.
Okay.
It was seen as a potential win-win, you know,
right.
Generating additional funding for schools while also diversifying revenue streams.
So problem solved, right? Everyone's happy.
Well, not quite. Even with the infusion of sales tax revenue, there were still calls for property tax increases to support schools.
Hmm.
It really highlights the constant tension between the demand for resources and the reluctance to raise taxes.
Sounds like a tough knot to untangle.
Yeah.
So how do these political dynamics impact the financial reality for Shawnee Public Schools? Are they caught in the crossfire?
Absolutely. They're operating within a system that's shaped by these competing forces.
Right.
And it influences everything from their budgeting decisions to their long-term planning.
Okay, so it's not just about crunching numbers. It's about navigating a complex political landscape.
Right.
But what does this all mean for our listeners? Why should they care about these political battles over school funding?
Because these debates have very real consequences.
Go.
They affect the quality of education that our children receive, the working conditions for teachers, and the overall vitality of our communities.
So it's not just some abstract political squabble.
No.
It's about the future of our schools and our communities.
That's right.
It's about investing in the next generation and creating a brighter future for everyone.
Precisely. And understanding these financial reports gives you the power to engage in those conversations, to advocate for the policies that you believe in, and to hold your elected officials accountable.
It's all about being an informed and engaged citizen, right? Knowing the facts, understanding the issues, and making your voice heard.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power. And when it comes to school finance, that power rests in the hands of the community.
Now let's bring this back to Shawnee Public Schools. We've talked about their funding sources, their budgeting practices, and the political context in which they operate.
Right.
But how does all of this translate into the day-to-day reality for students and teachers? What's the impact on the ground?
That's a crucial question, and it's where the rubber meets the road. You know, these financial decisions have a tangible impact on everything from class sizes to the availability of extracurricular activities.
So give us some concrete examples. How do these financial realities manifest themselves in the classrooms and hallways of Shawnee Public Schools?
Well, let's start with class sizes, one of the, you know, key metrics of educational quality.
Right.
If the district is facing budget constraints, they may be forced to increase class sizes,
yeah,
which can make it more challenging for teachers to provide individualized attention to students.
Right. It's hard for a teacher to connect with 30 students in a classroom the same way they can with 20.
Right.
So larger class sizes can potentially impact the quality of instruction.
Exactly. And it's not just about the number of students. It's also about the resources available.
Right.
If funding is tight, the district may have to make tough choices about what programs to cut or scale back.
Okay, so what are some of the programs that might be on the chopping block when budgets get squeezed?
Well, extracurricular activities are often vulnerable. Things like sports music and drama.
Yeah.
These programs provide valuable opportunities for students to develop their interests, explore their talents, and build social skills.
Right.
But they can also be expensive to maintain.
And I imagine cuts to extracurriculars can have a ripple effect on school morale and potentially even academic performance.
You're absolutely right. Extracurriculars play an important role in creating a well-rounded educational experience, and their absence can be felt throughout the school community.
So we're seeing how these financial decisions shaped by political forces can have a direct impact on the lives of students and teachers.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that these aren't just numbers on a spreadsheet.
Right.
They represent real people and real opportunities.
Absolutely. And it underscores the importance of community engagement in these issues. We need to be informed. We need to make our voices heard. And we need to hold our elected officials accountable for making decisions that prioritize the well-being of our schools and our children.
Well said. It's clear that school finance is a complex and multifaceted issue. But by understanding the nuts and bolts, by peeling back the layers of the budget, and by considering that broader political context, we can gain a deeper appreciation for the challenges and opportunities facing districts like Shawnee Public Schools.
And ultimately, that understanding empowers us to be more effective advocates for the kind of education system we want for our children and our communities.
So as we wrap up this second part of our deep dive, let me pose a question to our listeners. What role do you think the community should play in shaping the future of school funding in Oklahoma? Is it solely the responsibility of elected officials, or do citizens have a duty to engage in these discussions and advocate for the needs of their schools? All right, so we've explored the budget, the political landscape, and the on-the-ground impact of financial decisions in Shawnee Public Schools.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is. But now let's zoom in on a specific aspect of their financial picture, and that is child nutrition.
Okay.
It's an area that often gets overshadowed by the bigger ticket items like teacher salaries and infrastructure.
Sure.
But child nutrition is absolutely crucial. It's about ensuring that students have access to the nutritious meals they need to learn, grow, and thrive.
Right. It's hard to focus on algebra when your stomach's rumbling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's dig into Shawnee Public Schools' approach to child nutrition. What stood out to you in the reports?
Well, the first thing that caught my eye was the fluctuation in funding over the years, as we touched on earlier. The child nutrition budget hasn't always kept pace with the overall budget growth. In some years, it received a healthy boost, while in others, it faced cutbacks.
That's concerning.
Yeah.
It seems like a program that should be consistently prioritized given its, direct impact on student well-being.
Yeah.
So what factors might contribute to this funding roller coaster?
Well, it's a complex interplay of forces, including state and federal funding levels, local priorities, and the district's overall financial health.
Okay, so it's not just a matter of the district deciding to spend more or less on child nutrition.
No.
They're operating within a larger system that influences their choices.
Right.
But let's break it down. How does the funding breakdown actually work for child nutrition? Where does the money come from?
So the child nutrition program is funded through a combination of federal, state, and local sources. The National School Lunch Program, a federally assisted meal program, provides a significant portion of the funding the state also contributes, and then the district supplements with local funds.
So it's a multi-layered funding pie.
It is.
But how does the district decide how to slice that pie? What factors influence their allocation decisions for child nutrition?
Well, they have to weigh a range of considerations, including student need, program costs, and the availability of funding from other sources. It's a balancing act.
Right. They're trying to stretch those dollars as far as possible while still providing quality meals for their students. But I'm curious, beyond the numbers, what does child nutrition actually look like in Shawnee Public Schools? What kind of meals are they serving?
Well, they offer a variety of breakfast and lunch options that are designed to meet USDA nutritional guidelines.
Go ahead.
They strive to provide fresh, healthy, and appealing meals that cater to different dietary needs and preferences.
So it's not just mystery meat and soggy vegetables.
Not anymore. School meals have come a long way.
I'm glad to hear that.
They're really focusing on whole grains, fruits, vegetables, and lean proteins, trying to make those healthy choices both delicious and accessible.
That's great to hear. But what about students who have special dietary restrictions or allergies? How does the district accommodate those needs?
They have procedures in place to handle those situations. Students can request modified meals, and the district works with families to ensure that all students have access to safe and nutritious options.
So they're taking a personalized approach.
Right.
Recognizing that one size doesn't fit all when it comes to student nutrition.
Exactly.
But let's step back for a moment and consider the bigger picture. Why is child nutrition so important? What are the stakes?
Well, on the most basic level, it's about ensuring that students have the fuel they need to learn and grow.
Right.
Studies have shown that children who eat a nutritious breakfast perform better academically, have better attendance, and exhibit fewer behavioral problems.
So it's not just about filling empty stomachs. It's about setting students up for success in all aspects of their lives.
Exactly. And beyond the immediate benefits, child nutrition programs also play a role in promoting lifelong healthy habits.
Oh, okay.
By exposing children to a variety of nutritious foods, we can help them develop a taste for healthy eating that will stay with them into adulthood.
So it's an investment in their long-term well-being?
Yes.
Both physically and academically?
Absolutely. And it's an investment that pays dividends for the whole community.
Okay, so we've established that child nutrition is essential, but what are some of the challenges that Shawnee Public Schools faces in providing these crucial services?
Well, funding is always a challenge, as we've discussed, but there are other hurdles as well, such as rising food costs, staffing shortages, and the need to constantly adapt to changing nutritional guidelines.
So it's a complex landscape.
It is.
And the district's juggling a lot of balls. But despite these challenges, it sounds like they're committed to providing quality meals for their students.
They are, and it's a testament to the hard work and dedication of the child nutrition staff.
Now, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to circle back to a question we posed earlier. What role should the community play in shaping the future of school funding in Oklahoma? And specifically, how can we as citizens advocate for continued support of child nutrition programs?
That's a great question, and I think it's crucial for citizens to be informed and engaged in these issues. We can start by staying informed about school budgets and funding priorities. We can attend school board meetings, contact our elected officials, and participate in community discussions about education.
So it's about making our voices heard.
Yeah.
And letting our leaders know that we prioritize child nutrition.
Exactly. And we can also support child nutrition programs directly by volunteering our time or donating resources.
Great points. Ultimately, it's about recognizing that child nutrition is an investment in the future of our community. And it's an investment that we should all be willing to make.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, I think that concludes our deep dive into the finances of Shawnee Public Schools. We've explored the budget from every angle, uncovered some hidden gems, and gained a deeper understanding of the challenges and opportunities facing this district.
It's been a fascinating journey, and I hope our listeners feel empowered to continue exploring these issues on their own.
Absolutely. We've provided links to the financial reports in the show notes so you can dig in and draw your own conclusions. Remember, knowledge is power, and when it comes to school finance, that power belongs to the community.
So stay curious, stay engaged, and let's work together to ensure that all students have the resources they need to succeed.
Until next time, keep those minds sharp and those budgets balanced.